You're listening to the Fresh Hell Podcast. Fresh Hell contains stories of a disturbing and often graphic nature and is intended for a mature audience. Please don't let your kids listen to this, or they might turn out like us.
I'm Annie in America.
And I'm Johanna in Austria, and you're listening to your favorite international podcast. This is the podcast hosted by two online friends who never met in real life and who get together once a week to talk about murder, mystery, and the macabre throughout history.
That's right. Before we start, we want to give a quick shout out to all of our new listeners. Welcome. We're so glad you found us. If you make your way through our back catalog, please remember our audio got better over time.
True.
Also, a huge, huge shout out to all of our regular listeners, our Hellions, our YouTube audience, and of course, our newest Patreon members. We couldn't do it without all of your support, your downloads, reviews, recommendations, and your membership to our Patreon support. We just appreciate it so much.
Yes, we're really so thankful. And if you want to hear more about how to support this podcast with your words, your time, or other things,
your diamonds,
listen until the end of the episode.
Heirloom carpets.
Because that's when we'll tell you all about that.
Yeah.
Today's episode, some of you know, I had a very unexpected death in the family recently. My sister Moose and I just went on a cruise with my birth mother and her wonderful husband, Jim, to celebrate their 40th wedding anniversary. He had thrown his back out just a couple of days before the cruise, but was adamant we weren't going to cancel, he was going to go, and it would be fine. And he was such a good sport about it that entire week. But boy, did he need to have surgery for a slipped disc, we found out when he got back. But otherwise, he was the picture of health. He has done so much work for me around our house. Like the healthiest, fittest guy, you know? And he unexpectedly had some symptoms that he actually thought were, he thought maybe he was getting a cold. He thought maybe he was coming down with something. And he felt like he had a little bit of heaviness in his chest. And because he is a retired firefighter, he called an ambulance out of an abundance of caution. He was right, unfortunately. It was a cardiac event, and we lost him in the emergency room. We know it was instant, and we know it was unrecoverable. We're grateful that he didn't suffer. He would have hated that, but he was only 67, and, you know, like I said, just in such good health, and we're just in shock. The family had only lost my cousin, his nephew Josh, in that terrible camping accident last September. So the whole family is just reeling. You know, it's just been a tough time. And anytime something like this happens, you're always overcome with the feeling that there's something, just anything that you could do to help with anything. But there just really isn't. I can't take this grief away from the people I love, but what I can do is put together an episode in Jim's memory that further promotes his life's work of emergency safety and preparation. Like I said, he was a retired firefighter, and spreading safety information was his thing. Apart from being a husband, dad, uncle, brother, just all around a great guy. And he would be the first to tell you that you do not have enough fire extinguishers. You don't. Just FYI, you don't. This episode is for him. And anything I get wrong is on me. I wrote most of these notes for this one, and the primary sources for this episode are the National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA, the USGS, or United States Geological Survey, the NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, NCEI, the National Center for Environmental Information, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, as well as an entire playlist on YouTube that I watched while I was down hard with the flu. As I was watching stuff, I started creating a playlist, so I can just share that massive playlist so that you have something to watch the next time you're down with the bug. There's also Britannia and other sources we'll note as we go. This episode really is just regurgitating a lot of safety facts, but do you have 40 hours to spend reading everything you can get your little raccoon paws on about a subject so you can boil it down to a few easily digestible hours for your friends and loved ones? No, you do not. That's what you have me for. So that's what we're going to do.
This will be a more family-friendly episode, and hopefully after listening to this, you'll have a lot of new safety information and some weather fun facts.
Yeah. Good pub trivia stuff. I wasn't really sure where to start. You know, like, organization is not my strong suit. So I ended up going with Carol King order, which begins with, of course, I feel the earth move under my feet, and then moves on to the sky, a tumbling down, right? But before we get into specifics of these natural disasters and phenomena, many of these events, earthquakes in particular, cause secondary problems like fires. So let's get that covered first. I was also thinking about this just recently, and some of you know what I'm talking about, but I was watching American football playoff coverage, and it showed a tailgating shenanigans party, you know, before a playoff game, and this guy messing around with a grill caught on fire. Now, they're in a parking lot, full of snow everywhere. And Johanna, I ask you, what did this grown man do when he caught on fire? He flailed around like a freaking nutcase, screaming until someone drop-kicked him into a snowbank. Did they stop teaching stop, drop, and roll? What's happening? That's the number one thing about fire. If it's on you, stop, drop to the ground, and roll around to smother the flames. Do they teach you the same thing in Austria, I assume?
Like teach you in school, teach you?
Yeah.
Because they definitely didn't when I was in school. I'd assume they don't do now. I think it was more considered one of these life things your parents were supposed to teach you here.
No, here we all learned. It was part of fire drills too. You know what I mean? We practiced stop, drop, and roll. And we also practiced duck and cover. That's a story for a whole other day. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, this is good then, because now what we have is a solid refresher full of life-saving information to make sure that you remember to stop, drop, and roll if you catch fire, okay? So the first tip we have is let's start with house numbers. They aren't just a fun way to express your style. They're important for first responders to find your home in an emergency.
Yeah, kind of.
They are. Be sure they're visible, easily visible. And if delivery people struggle to find you, so will the ambulance. Think of it that way, right? I don't know why I'm like lecturing all of you. You remember that. Got it? Okay. My next tip is to never be so incapacitated that you cannot remember to stop, drop, and roll. If you're having that much fun, at least have someone non-incapacitated around to keep an eye on you and the pets and drop kick you into a snowbank as needed.
Used to be called a trip sitter.
That's it.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Have somebody just babysit you. I think it's literally still called that. Moving inside, be sure you have working smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors on every level of your home and outside each bedroom. Change the batteries and test them every time we change the clocks. That's when to remember to do it. That's the best way. Also, be aware, because this is something I only learned recently, that the sensors inside of smoke alarms will eventually die. And after 10 years, the whole thing needs to be replaced. If you look at the back of your smoke alarm, you'll find a printed date, at least in the United States.
Same here.
Is it the same there? Yeah, good.
Yep.
And it's good for 10 years from that date. Not from when you bought it, not from when you installed it or put the first batteries in, from that date. It's a wear issue. So if you have smoke alarms or carbon monoxide alarms that are older than 10 years, they're no good. Check the back. Do it for battery-operated and hardwired system alarms. What Paul does is he writes the expiration date on the back in Sharpie. And then every time he changes the batteries, he's just sort of aware and he'll say, you know, whatever the date is coming up. So let's just order new ones before the next battery change, you know, that kind of thing. And let's all agree to be better about really, truly, sincerely testing and changing batteries and not just waiting until that really annoying beeping drives us mad, like the telltale heart, and you're swinging a baseball bat at the ceiling at 2 a.m. You know what I mean? In your gym jams. You're like, it's fine. My life is fine. I regret nothing. The dog's crying. Let's just all do better, because just having working fire alarms in your home will cut your risk of dying in a fire in half. That's huge.
That's huge.
That's huge. If nothing else, remember you need those precious seconds to get your pet out with you. So for their sakes, have those working smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. The information we're giving you today, and I can't say this enough, is sort of general. Please, please, please look up safety information for where you specifically live for all of this, because the dangers of how fires begin vary wildly on where you live and how you heat your space, right? Like, so we just urge you to look up fire safety for your specific area. And also be sure you have a fire extinguisher around your home in easy reach and you know how to use them. And also if you have, you know, gift cards for coffee or, you know, a cake that you made that you were like, I shouldn't eat this. What should I do with it? Bring it to your local fire department. They'll help you take care of it.
Also the fire extinguishers, you also need to have them checked regularly.
Absolutely.
Here, every year, the fire department, you can bring all your fire extinguishers in and they're going to check them. And if they are no good anymore, you can purchase fire extinguishers here for a really low price.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to look in to see if we have something like that. I bet we do. If we don't, we should. Yeah. Fire extinguishers are so important. When I first met Jim and had found Annette, it's one of the first things I got were more fire extinguishers from Jim. It is a really great gift. If you're not sure what to get someone who has everything, get them a couple of fire extinguishers. Yeah. Just make sure they're in easy reach and you know how to use them. The next thing that you want to do is to walk around your home, and in each room, you just want to look at how you would get out of that space in the event of a fire. I know I'm paranoid, but our house is old, old and wood. And when I show people around who are staying, I will show them the best ways out and how our windows open and close. Yeah, so like, this is the best downstairs window to go out if you have to go out a window, these kind of things. Yeah. If you have kids, practice when it's not scary so that it'll be less new when it is a little scary, you know? Have a meeting space or two even, like a second, a primary or a backup in case there's a problem with the first. So you can find each other, because you might not be in the same room as your family and you might not be able to get to other parts of your space. The other thing to think about is how you would get out in the event of an emergency. The house that we had fall through before we bought this one, it was beautiful and it had a third floor. And because of that, I had been looking into these boxes that you can buy. They're really inauspicious looking, and you basically bolt them into the studs underneath a window, and then inside of it, in case you need it, God forbid, is a rope ladder, and you can toss it out the window in case of an emergency, which I think is just smart, you know, if there's no way safely down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I also saw a similar item after the terrible, terrible Grenfell fires in London. I'm sure many of you remember on the 14th of June, 2017, when the 24-story Grenfell Tower block of apartments, or flats, as they call them in the UK, caught fire and burned for 60 hours. 74 people died, more than 70 were injured, and 223 escaped. It was the worst UK residential fire since the German bombings of World War II. That was incredibly tragic. And after that, I'd also seen you can buy emergency rappelling backpacks that are good for up to 25 stories, which might be worth looking into. But I'm guessing these kind of setups are outside the financial grasp of the average person living in a high rise. That said, they're not the worst thing to look into if you do have that sort of disposable income. More practically, you want to make sure that you always have a flashlight on your nightstand, which I'm laughing as I say that because every single nightstand in this house has a flashlight on it. It's my husband's deal. And then, yeah, so have that flashlight on your nightstand. Just prop it up next to that big old stack of books. And then along with any eyeglasses, hearing aids, anything like that that you would need, have that in really easy reach. Also, be sure your mobility aids, as required, are very close to your bed and easy to grab.
Yeah, also don't waste time because fires spread quickly and they're smoky with thick toxic smoke from basically all your worldly possessions melting. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also, fires are apparently very dark. They light them to make them dramatic in film and on TV, but in real life they are very dark on account of that thick, nasty smoke from all your worldly possessions melting.
All your hopes and dreams just turning into toxic fumes.
Always remember, you can replace stuff. But you and your family and your pets, they are irreplaceable. And so here are some helpful tips to help you in the event of a fire. First of all, stay calm. Get low. Get onto the floor and crawl to stay below the smoke. The smoke will rise, so try to stay under the smoke. Crawl to the bedroom door, which should be closed for fire safety. And when you reach the door, feel for heat with the back of your hand, because it's more sensitive. And if the door is cool, open it and make your way to the exit, knocking on doors and yelling to others as you make your way to your nearest exit. And you know where that is because you practiced, right? Because you know from listening to this episode that fires can move so quickly, you may have less than a minute to get out safely. Okay, but what if when you went to feel the door and you realized it was hot? If the door is hot, don't open it. Grab a blanket or a towel and put it along the bottom of the door to keep the smoke out. Turn on a light if you can, then crawl to a window and open it. If you don't have safe means to escape, do not jump. Stay put. Yell and wave your arms and shine your flashlight to get the attention of firefighters to your location. Okay, but what if you're in a high rise? Never use an elevator during a fire. Make sure you practice your building escape routes. If you find a stairwell full of smoke, don't take it. Remember that smoke is toxic and most fatalities in fires are not burn-related, they're smoke-related. You're more likely to suffocate, so stay away from the smoke. If both the stairwells are full of smoke, go back to your apartment and give 911 your exact location, or we don't have 911 here, the emergency number, the first responders, try to give them your exact location. Close all the doors you can between you and the fire and get to a window you can open. Don't break a window if you can avoid it. Smoke direction can change and all of a sudden you can have a situation where you need to close that window. Use a wet cloth over your nose and mouth, which can help, but that doesn't prevent you from inhaling toxic fumes. Also, what I want to add, as someone who has spent a lot of time in different hotels for work, so many nights every month, make sure when you check into your hotel room to look at the back of your door and check for the nearest escape routes.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Every single time.
I know it's you're tired and you just want to lie down and sleep, but trust me, check it.
Yeah.
At least, you know, check it, see where you would run.
Okay. Yeah, we need to do a travel edition of this one, this episode. Yeah. That would be good because it's a whole different ballgame than when you're at home, right?
True. And listen, I mean, hopefully these basic fire safety tips will never be needed, but hellions know it's better to be prepared than sorry.
Mm-hmm. And over time, we're just going to keep adding to the things you have to keep near your bed, depending on where you live. It's going to be just an enormous list of safety precautions. It's fine. So that's a good start.
I'd say this is a great moment to take a very quick break and talk to you about the fantastic sponsor of this week's episode, the Art of Crime podcast.
If you haven't already dived into this gripping podcast, now is the perfect time. The Art of Crime is the ultimate blend of true crime and history, catering to enthusiasts like us and you out there. Trust us, you will not want to miss it.
Remember when we first introduced you to their exploration of art suspects in the Jack the Ripper case and the thrilling tales of assassins and their intriguing victims? Well, they're back with season 3 and it's an absolute game changer.
This season, titled Artful Secrets, delves into the extraordinary life of Marie Grossholtz, better known as Madame Tussaud. From her wax-coated world to the macabre tales that made her famous, host Gavin Whitehead takes you on a historical journey like no other.
In the latest episodes, he tells you everything you need to know about the French Revolution and its most violent moments. You might have heard the phrase, "the revolution devours its own children," coined by the fact that not only the French nobility were losing their heads left and right, but after a while the reign of terror turned against their own, sending revolutionaries and citizens alike to the guillotine. And Madame Tussaud was there, making wax copies of famous heads for the looky-loos to stare at. Explore Madame Tussaud's royal patronage, her narrow escape from France, and her subsequent travel to London.
Gavin takes you through the evolution of Madame Tussaud's Chamber of Horrors, featuring macabre curiosities and effigies of notorious criminals. It's a riveting experience, and I can attest to that, having visited the Chamber of Horrors myself.
We know you love history, true crime, and probably art, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. So trust us, the Art of Crime will soon be your new obsession. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and stay connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for bonus content.
And for the full immersive experience, don't forget to visit their website at artofcrimepodcast.com. Dive deep into transcripts, bibliographies, and archival images for each episode, because at the Art of Crime, where art, history, and true crime collide, every detail matters.
So, after this episode, go and look up The Art of Crime, subscribe, and get ready for an unforgettable journey with Gavin Whitehead. And happy listening.
Enjoy. Now I think it's time to get on to the disasters. Let's start with the earth moving under our feet, so earthquakes, and then the resulting tsunamis. And then next week we'll talk about the sky tumbling down, which would be, hurricanes, blizzards, tornadoes next week, I think?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
All right.
So, there are about 50 measurable earthquakes a day around the world, and earthquakes are caused by a few things, including volcanic eruptions, mining and fracking, and so on and so on. But we're talking about those caused by the movement of tectonic plates. If you think of these tectonic plates as the puzzle pieces that make up the Earth crust, and the edges of the puzzle pieces are called plate boundaries. The world's greatest mountain ranges are a result of the tectonic plates pushing into one another over time, and so they continue to grow slowly over time and to shape the Earth's continents. Where the plates meet are called faults. There are 7 major and 8 minor plates. The largest plates are the Antarctic, Eurasian, and North American plates.
If you ever visit Iceland, you can visit the place where the North American and Eurasian plates meet. It's a historically rich area, and you can actually see the different plates. There's you can see the two different plates because one is higher in the ground than the other. It's like a whole thing. And you can go diving there and see a rift from underneath the ocean. It's really cool. I'll share some pics when we were there. But yeah, they're everywhere.
And on the other side of that, you have the North American and Pacific plates meeting, which is the San Andreas Fault. Because tectonic plates have rough edges, they often get stuck on one another as they move around, and they are constantly, slowly moving. This area where the plates are stuck will build and build until there's enough force to unstick them. And when this happens, we get a huge release of energy comparable to multiple atomic bombs. And the shock waves are what cause an earthquake. There is no early detection for earthquakes, although we know some areas are more prone to them. To quote the USGS, three zones in particular are the Circumpacific Seismic Belt or Ring of Fire. Don't sing.
I'm not gonna sing.
Which is found along the rim of the Pacific Ocean, where about 81% of the world's largest earthquakes occur. The belt extends from Chile northwards along the South American coast through Central America, Mexico, the west coast of the United States, the southern part of Alaska, through the Aleutian Islands to Japan, the Philippine Islands, New Guinea, the island groups of the Southwest Pacific, and to New Zealand. That's quite a journey.
I'd like to follow that belt on a cruise sometime.
The second important belt is the L-pipe, which extends from Java to Sumatra, through the Himalayas, the Mediterranean, and out into the Atlantic. This belt accounts for about 17% of the world's largest earthquakes, including some of the most destructive. If you remember the episode we did about What a Time to Be Alive?
Yeah.
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 So Sumatra, that's kind of where the really bad stuff went down when it came to volcanic eruptions and earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
The third prominent belt follows the submerged mid-Atlantic ridge, but you can have earthquakes in unexpected areas, which we'll touch on in a few seconds. Minutes.
Shortly. Eventually.
Pretty soon.
Momentarily.
All kinds of damage can happen during an earthquake, and it's fascinating, but of course also terrifying.
It's so scary. Yeah, it's terrifying.
According to the California Earthquake Authority, the damage caused by earthquakes is from ground shaking, ground rupture, landslides, tsunamis, and liquefaction. And I never even thought about that until this episode.
It's the worst. It's the worst thing I learned in this whole thing of research, right? It's the scariest.
It's really scary.
I don't like it at all.
Earthquake damage from fires is the most important secondary effect. Then they dive into more specifics, so let's run through what the actual dangers are when an earthquake hits, because it's not the earth opening up and swallowing you whole, that's sinkholes, and that's a story for another time. So first up, we have ground shaking. So the shaking ground is the vibration of the ground during an earthquake. The shaking triggers other hazards, such as liquefaction and landslides. Most earthquake damage results from the seismic waves passing beneath buildings, roads, and other structures. Then come the surface rupture and ground displacement. The primary earthquake hazard is surface rupture. It can be caused by vertical or horizontal movement on either side of a ruptured fault. Ground displacement, which can affect large land areas, can produce severe damage to structures, roads, railways, and pipelines. Earthquakes can also trigger landslides and mudslides, especially in areas with water-soaked soils. Landslides may result in falling rocks and debris that collide with people, trees, animals, buildings, and vehicles. They also can block roads and disrupt utility lines. And now comes the really terrifying part. Liquefaction. The shaking from an earthquake can turn loose soil into a liquid during an earthquake. Did you know that before?
I did know it before, but I think my brain had just conveniently forgotten it because it's so scary.
So liquefaction can undermine the foundations and supports of buildings, bridges, pipelines, and roads, causing them to sink into the ground, collapse, or dissolve. I think that's what I always thought of or pictured as the ground opening and swallowing everything. That's not what that is.
Mm-mm. It's liquefaction.
Yeah.
It's like quicksand caused by earthquakes. Yeah. It's terrifying.
Yeah, but not moving doesn't help in that case.
No, nothing. No. So, quick sidebar about both the 1985 Mexico City quake and the 1989 Loma Prieta World Series quake. They were made significantly worse because of liquefaction. Because both of these cities were built on fill, which caused bridges and buildings to sway much longer and much more violently, bringing them down. The Loma Prieta quake killed 63 and injured nearly 4,000,
In the case of Mexico City, it had also been built on fill. In their case, it was old, drained, and filled Aztec Lake, which also not a good idea. And so, again, you have that fill that one of the things I watched explained it to the difference between if you put a piece of jelly or jello, depending on where you live, and, you know, just a block of cheese on a something that was shaking, you know, how long before they stop moving, that sort of thing. So to quote Wikipedia, because this is the other fascinating and terrible feature, there's also something called mechanical resonance, and that is the tendency of a mechanical system to respond at greater amplitude when the frequency of its oscillations match the system's natural frequency of vibrations. It will cause violent swaying motions and potentially catastrophic failure in improperly constructed structures, including bridges, buildings, and airplanes. This is a phenomenon known as resonance disaster. Another example of this would be my favorite party trick in high school, which was breaking a glass when I would hit a high note, right? So in the case of the Mexico City quake, unfortunately, the resonation, I knew about this before, but again, it was incredibly upsetting to think about. The resonation ended up being very specific to buildings in approximately the 5 to 15 story range. I read a few slight variances there. Very specifically, those buildings, which just came crashing down, including schools and most of their hospitals. The total casualties in Mexico City, the quake, are unknown, and there could be as many as 45,000 dead, with over 30,000 confirmed injured.
That's because also Mexico City, I don't know how it is nowadays, but back at the time and pretty much recently, it's like, Mexico City is, can't even imagine how huge it is.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people keep coming and going, you know, trying to move to the city and then moving away. It's like we have that in the episodes about European cities.
Halifax.
At the turn of the century and yeah. So I think it was pretty hard for them to know exactly how many casualties there were because of that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So to continue with the California Earthquake Authority, they say about tsunamis that an earthquake generated within the Pacific Ocean floor will generate a tsunami, which is actually a series of very long waves, and large tsunamis which travel from the ocean floor to the surface are dangerous to human health, property, and infrastructure. Long-lasting effects of tsunami destruction can be felt beyond the coastline. And then, of course, fires. Earthquake damage facts show fires caused by earthquakes are the second most common hazard. Earthquake fires start when electrical and gas lines are dislodged due to the earth shaking. Gas is set free as gas lines are broken, and a spark will start a firestorm.
Yeah, the infamous 1906 San Francisco earthquake was so devastating because of the fires and the liquefaction of the landfill of the Bay Area, which caused those gas lines to rupture. And it also ruptured the water lines in the same way it ruptured the gas lines. So firefighters were just completely helpless. There was no water to fight any of the fires with. Side note, I'm pretty sure the California Earthquake Authority is an insurance company, and this is not an endorsement. I don't know anything about them, except they have really excellently simply presented information that was useful. But speaking of insurance, this is actually something I keep meaning to look into, and every couple years I think, I'm going to look into this, and I do, and then I think, I don't know, I'm going to put a pin in it, and then I circle back to it a few more years later. So at the moment, we don't have earthquake insurance on our homeowner's policy, and I realize that this is probably very Massachusetts specific, but we have a lot of listeners in Massachusetts, and this might be true of other places too. We do get earthquakes here. I've experienced a few just in the last decade, but they're small. Like, you think a big truck is going by and the bookcase will rattle a little and dishes maybe. And then you're like, wait, there's no truck. Is this an earthquake? And then by the time you log on to social media to see everyone's post saying, hey, was that an earthquake? It's over. There's no damage. It's just done. It's like the tiniest little thing. So do we actually need earthquake insurance?
I hope not, because I didn't go for it, but I was alarmed to learn that if an earthquake caused, say, a small gas leak, which then started a fire in your house and your house burned down, you're out of luck, because you're not protected from the fire if there was a small earthquake which jostled something. It's all related. So do you have to have separate earthquake insurance, or...
I honestly never looked into it. I don't think we have earthquake insurance. I mean, small earthquakes, of course, can happen here as well. Just as you described them, it's like a truck going by.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, earthquakes are not a big concern here, I'd say.
No. Here either. But it's not like they don't happen here. I looked up really quickly to see what was Boston's worst or the worst in this area. So we both checked this. We just did quick Wikipedia searches because otherwise it's too deep a dive. So to quote Wikipedia, the 1755 Cape Ann earthquake took place off the coast of present-day Massachusetts on November 18th. At between 6 and 6.3 on the Richter scale, it remains the largest earthquake in the history of Massachusetts. No one was killed, but it damaged hundreds of buildings in Boston and was felt as far north as Nova Scotia and as far south as South Carolina. Sailors on a ship more than 200 miles or 320 kilometers offshore felt the quake and mistook it at first for their ship running aground. Many residents of Boston and the surrounding areas attributed the quake to God, and it occasioned a brief increase in religious fervor in the city. Modern studies estimate that if a similar quake shook Boston today, with all that fill and liquefaction, it would result in as much as $5 billion in damage and, more importantly, hundreds of deaths. End quote. Terrible.
As for Vienna, we have to go back even further to the Neulenkbach earthquake from 15th of September 1590, and I already mentioned this in the episode when we spoke about the Stephansdom, the St. Stephen's Cathedral. This was the strongest historically documented earthquake in what today is northeastern Austria. And this is, again, we checked Wikipedia for a quick summary, and this is what they had to say, quote, "Significant destruction occurred in Vienna. The upper half of St. Michael's Church Tower collapsed in spite of its steel reinforcement. The Scottish Abbey was severely damaged and the southern tower of the St. Stephen's Cathedral suffered as well. At this time it was not customary to document damage to property that did not serve sacred purposes or was directly used by the aristocracy, and very little information has survived concerning the destruction and harm inflicted on ordinary citizens. Therefore, the fact that the death of 9 people in a collapsing traveler's hostel was specifically mentioned in the chronicles suggests that the number of urban casualties cannot have been significant. At Zwentendorf, 40 kilometers to the north of the presumed epicenter, the local parish church was so heavily damaged that it became unusable. Walls and roofs collapsed at the Mauerbach Charterhouse west of Vienna, and many fortifications in Lower Austria, for example in Sigartskirchen or Altlenkbach, needed substantial repair. Strong shocks were reported from up to 300 kilometers to the north of the epicenter at places such as Abertham in the westernmost part of Bohemia and Frankenstein in Silesia, where the slightly leaning city tower can still be seen." End quote.
So, this is important. How far are you from that leaning tower of Frankenstein? Have you been? Have you visited?
So, I had actually had to look it up. Nowadays, that's in Poland, Silesia. Of course, the town is called Sapkowice Laskie, and you'd have to drive through Czech Republic before, and it would be a 4-hour drive, more or less. And I know for Americans, that's like...
Let's do it.
Right next door.
I'll make a playlist. Yeah.
But for Europeans, it's like, hell no.
So before we talk about a few specific earthquakes, let's run through earthquake safety, because let's remember that they can happen anywhere and anytime. The CDC tells us to drop, cover, and hold on. Well, lots of people say that, but this info now is directly from the CDC. So They say drop onto your hands and knees before the earthquake knocks you down. Like, get on the ground before you are put down on the ground, basically. And this will protect you from falling, but also let you still move around to safer parts of the room as needed. You want to cover your head and neck and your entire body, if possible, by getting underneath a sturdy table or a desk. If there isn't anything around that you can safely shelter underneath, what you want to do is get down near an interior wall, not an exterior wall, an interior wall, or next to low-lying furniture that won't fall on top of you, right? Get down next to a couch. Get down. Don't get next to the bookcase and all the cupboards, right? And then you want to cover your head and your neck with your arms and your hands, and then hold on to your shelter or to your head and neck. If you're underneath the table, hang on to the table and keep your head and neck underneath it. You really want to protect your vital organs and your spine and your brain. Be prepared to move with the shelter. If you're hanging onto the table and the table's sort of moving across the kitchen, just be prepared to hang on to that table and stay underneath it. If you are inside, stay inside. If you're outside, stay outside. I'm sure Paul understands the exact reason for this mathematically, but I do not. I didn't look into it. Just if you're inside, stay in. If you're outside, stay out. Do not run outside or to other rooms during an earthquake. You are less likely to be injured if you stay where you are. Unless, of course, you and your baby are in the conservatory with the glass roof and Miss Scarlet with the martinis and the chandeliers. It's fine. In that case, get the hell out of there, all right? Get under the table. Now, to reduce your chances of being hurt, take the following actions, if you can. If possible, within a few seconds before shaking gets worse, you want to quickly move away from glass, hanging objects, bookcases, china cabinets, large furniture that could fall on you, grandfather clocks. You want to get away from those baby grand pianos. Put their lids down, everybody. Watch out for falling objects like bricks. Don't go near fireplaces or chimneys. Like, stay away from those. They're going to come tumbling down. You want to stay away from heavy light fixtures, wall hangings, things on tall shelves, cabinets with doors that could swing open. If it's available, anything nearby, grab something to shield your head and face from falling debris and broken glass. If you're in the kitchen, quickly turn off the stove and take cover at the first sign of shaking. Also, be sure you know, sidebar, be sure you know where your water, gas, oil, know where all of the emergency shutoffs are in your home. Well, just know where they all are. If you're in bed and an earthquake starts while you're in bed, stay in bed. Hold on and stay there and put a pillow over your head and neck. You're less likely to be injured if you stay where you are. And broken glass on the floor can cause injuries if you walk or roll onto the floor. You also don't want to have your bed. If you live in an area that's somewhat prone to earthquakes, you definitely don't want your bed right next to a window, unless you have a special protective film for earthquakes on your windows, you know? Another important bit of safety mythology debunked is do not stand in a doorway. They used to say that when we were kids, like, oh, stand under a doorway. It's like the strongest part of the house. Not anymore, it's not. It might be if you're in a very old, specifically constructed house, but in modern day houses, doorways are no longer built stronger than other areas in the house. They do not protect you from the most likely source of injury, which is falling and flying around objects. Most earthquake-related injuries and deaths are caused by falling or flying objects such as TVs, lamps, glass, or bookcases, or by being, you know, knocked to the ground. If you're in a high-rise building, drop, cover, and hold on. It's the same as anywhere else. Again, you're going to move away from windows and outside walls. Stay in your building. Do not use the elevators. The electricity might go out and sprinklers may turn on. Don't panic. If you end up getting trapped by debris in an earthquake, stay calm. Try to get someone's attention by tapping on hard or metal parts of the structure you're in. Doing this might increase your chances of being found and rescued in a timely manner. If you're inside a crowded place, drop, cover, and hold on. Don't rush for doorways. Everyone's going to rush for doorways, and that way lies a trampling. So move away from anything tall, display shelves. You know, if you're in the bowling ball store, like, get the hell out. Leave that place. If you're outside, stay outside. Move away from buildings, utility wires. I love this list. It seems incredibly obvious, but here we go. Don't walk into any sinkholes, everybody. Stay away from them. Just walk around them. You're going to see a sinkhole, maybe, and you're going to think, I wonder what it looks like inside there. Don't walk up to the edge. Don't do it. Also, stay away from fuel lines and gas lines. The greatest danger from falling debris is just outside doorways and close to the outer walls of buildings, right? So think of it as like everybody's air conditioning unit is getting shaken out of their windows. Leave, if you're outside of a building, walk away from a building. Get to an open area if you can, away from trees, telephone poles, and buildings. Once in the open, get down low and stay there until the shaking stops. In addition to everybody's window air conditioners falling out, the window facades and other architectural details are often the first parts of a building to sort of fall off, so just stay away from those outside walls. If you're in a moving vehicle, stop as quickly and safely as possible, again, calmly, because the biggest danger is going to be everybody else losing their minds. And you're not going to do that because you already know what these fools are going to do. So you're just going to stay calm. So you're going to want to move your car to the shoulder or side of the road, away from utility poles or wires. And you also don't want to stop underneath an overpass, right? Stay in the car, set the parking brake. I like this. It says, a car may jiggle violently on its springs, but it's a good place to stay until the shaking stops. If you are in a stadium or a theater, stay in your seat, protect your head and neck with your arms, or any way possible, and don't leave until the shaking is over. If you have mobility issues and you cannot drop to the ground, try to sit or remain seated so you're not knocked over. If you're in a wheelchair, lock your wheels. Remove any items that aren't securely attached to the wheelchair. Protect your head and neck with a large book, a pillow, or your arms. The goal is to prevent injuries from falling down or from objects that could fall or be thrown on you. We encourage you to look up specific accessibility and other recommendations based on where you live, because that's going to vary based on what your situation is and what kind of home that you live in. Depending on where you live, there will be a number of different safety measures recommended, but the big things are just pretty much preventing everything I just listed. So you want to make sure that heavy furniture is anchored and bolted to the walls appropriately. You want to make sure that large appliances are secured with flexible cable or strapping. You want to make sure that heavy mirrors and pictures are not always hanging over places where you sit and sleep, right? I'm actually ordering some lightweight canvas prints of photos I've taken for that exact reason. We've been in this house almost 10 years, and I have nothing hanging above our bed or above any of the dog beds. All of my art is just in, like, traditional kind of wooden glass frames, you know?
It's not even about earthquakes. I'm always scared when I see, like, in movies, people having really heavy paintings.
Same.
Behind their bed. Like the head of their yep. bed up there. That's like a disaster to happen.
Totally. Even when we just have our washing machine on rinse and spin, you know, it can knock something off the wall in this house.
As for the impact of the seismic events, the largest earthquake ever recorded was a 9.5 magnitude on the Richter scale on 22nd of May 1960, which struck Valdivia in Chile. A page on the event on the NOAA website says in part, in the Chilean areas of Moín, Quenuia and La Pasada alone, at least 122 people lost their lives in the ensuing tsunami. The number of deaths in Chile associated with both of these catastrophic events is uncertain, but has been estimated between 490 to 5,700. Sinking of the ground due to earthquake known as subsidence produced local flooding in Chile. This permanently altered the shorelines of much of the area in Chile impacted by the earthquake, rendering all marine navigational charts of the affected areas obsolete.
Continuing, the main shock from the earthquake generated a tsunami that was not only destructive along the coast of Chile, but also caused numerous casualties and extensive property damage as far away as Hawaii, Japan, and the Philippines. Waves were observed throughout the Pacific Ocean basin. Damages were also reported in Tahiti, New Zealand, American Samoa, Alaska, Kamchatka, Russia, and additionally, tide gauges recorded waves in the Atlantic Ocean as well as the Indian Ocean, making it the first globally recorded tsunami. In Hawaii, the tsunami caused 61 deaths and 43 injuries, while two deaths took place on the west coast of the United States. The tsunami hit the Pacific coast of Japan almost a day after the earthquake struck Chile, causing death and destroying almost 3,000 homes. In the Philippines, the tsunami killed at least 21 people. The economic impacts of earthquakes and tsunami can be devastating. The Chilean government estimates that nearly 2 million people became homeless, and over 58,000 houses were completely destroyed. The damage from the earthquake and tsunami totaled more than $550 million. This is in 1960. In Hawaii, the tsunami created over $23.5 million in damage, and the U.S. West Coast suffered an additional $1 million in damage. The global extent of this tsunami led to the creation of the Pacific Tsunami Warning and Mitigation System in 1965. Today, the U.S. Tsunami Warning System includes the National Tsunami Warning Center and Pacific Tsunami Warning Center that forecast wave heights and the arrival times of tsunamis as they cross the ocean. End quote. I watched a lot of YouTube documentaries on earthquakes, and one of them was talking specifically about this quake in Chile had impacted a very agriculturally rich area, and that there was all of this really fertile farmland tied to the people working to it for generations that was wiped away and gone forever, and now it's a saltwater marsh overnight. And you just think about the general wealth, the generational wealth of just thousands of people just gone, their children's future gone, just nothing, you know?
You always hear people talking about like nothing bad ever can happen to them, or like they save up the money or they have their house, and then something happens that is so out of your control. Like you can do everything right in life and then something like this happens. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yep. It's so sad. We're going to speak more on tsunamis next week. We have so much more to talk about, but I think this is a good place to stop for now. Next week, we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about the after effects of earthquakes, including your avalanche, I think is my favorite pronunciation still from our Dyatlov episode, but avalanches, mudslides, tsunamis, what to do in case of a tsunami. And then we're also going to be talking about how you can best protect yourself and your family and your pets in the event of tornadoes, cyclones, hurricanes, you name it, blizzards, torrential rain. Yeah, sounds terrible.
Yeah,
can't wait to
can't
tell
wait.
You about it. My something good is that with each of these terrible, terrible disasters, something has been learned. Like, somehow it's more satisfying when we learn something from a tragedy to prevent other people from suffering the same fate. Hopefully, you know, that's the hope.
Yeah.
So I just hope if one person out there realizes that all of their damn smoke detectors are like ready to drink, they're old enough to drink. If your smoke detectors are ready to go to secondary school, you need new smoke detectors.
Well, my something good is that I don't live in an area that is prone to natural disasters.
Oh, yes.
That is really fortunate.
Yeah.
Really, really fortunate. And I'm happy about that.
Yes.
I mean, bad things can still happen, of course, but there's a lot of things that cannot happen or probably won't happen here from the geological circumstances
That's
that
right.
we're in.
We're very lucky to live in these places. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, so before we go, we would like to thank you for leaving the very, very kind reviews that you leave. We can't tell you how much we appreciate them. They really make our day. If you would like some more information on how to become a Patreon patron or where to buy merch, or if you want the P.O. box for sending things to us, any of that information, you will find it on our webpage, which is freshhellpodcast.com. And is there anything else that I need to...
Please tell your pets we said hi.
Yeah.
Hug them, cuddle them, treat them kindly. Also, treat your fellow human beings kindly. Give them, what do we say lately?
Give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Please, just initially. You don't have to constantly give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, if somebody's an asshole more than once, I'm fine. But
fuck them. And if you are going through hell,
keep going. Tschüss.
Bye.